Kevin Harlan here. Tonight at 5:30 Eastern, the NBA on Prime Crew is back as the Emirates NBA action heats up from Vegas for a thrilling semifinals doubleheader. Then on Tuesday night, December 16th at 8:30 Eastern, the last two teams standing will square off in the championship game for a shot at the cup, bragging rights, and a place in NBA history. And Prime is your exclusive home for it all. Not a Prime member? Sign up for a free 30-day trial to get started today. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details. Don't miss the thrilling conclusion of the Emirates NBA Cup live from Las Vegas, starting with the semifinals tonight, only on Prime.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Will they find a home? Sponsored by Geico. Steve is intrigued by the paranormal.
Otherworldly spirits really make a house a home, you know?
Janice has different taste.
I'd like my house to not be haunted.
Compromise is tough, but these two won't have to compromise when they bundle home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and they could save even more. In the end, Steve and Janice found a renovated Victorian that's only haunted from 9 to 5.
Okay, wife's home. Y'all gotta bounce.
Bye, Steve.
Bundling without compromise at Geico.com.
From the basement of the Bob and Tom Studios, it's That Josh Arnold Podcast. Oh, hello. My goodness, if it's not August already. Holy cow. Oh, summer just cruising by, and I hope wherever you're at, it's wonderful outside. It is here. Man, high 70s, low 80s, cloudless skies. I mean, it is good porch weather, I say. That's right. I love getting out there. I have become sort of an old man in my neighborhood. I'm often seen out in the front porch, sitting in my rocking chair. I love it. Man, what a good week to be here, because my guest this week, man, just doing some incredible stuff, and really doing a lot of good out there, and just brightening up the world, and making the earth a better place. Of course, my guest this week is you. That's right. Oh, you look good. I hope you're feeling good as well. Oh, man, thank you for all you're doing out there. Look, you're out there spreading positivity, and that's what we need. We certainly need to be doing, all right? Counteract some of that negativity that's being thrown around. Yeah, let's accentuate the positive, as old Bing used to sing. What else? This week's sponsor. Oh, boy, this is a good one. An important one, I say. I'm happy to have them aboard this week, sponsoring this episode, a spoon. Oh, my gosh. A pretty important tool, really. I think we take them for granted, but we wouldn't enjoy certain things nearly as much without a spoon. Soup, cereal, ice cream. I mean, we've all had to fork ice cream before. You know, let's say you're at a birthday party and you're given a flimsy paper plate there with a piece of cake and a scoop of ice cream on it. And you don't use the fork for the cake and then switch to a spoon for the ice cream. You usually just use the same tool. You can spoon cake, of course, but you can also fork ice cream. And that goes okay, but you're certainly not going to eat soup with a fork. My goodness. Or cereal. I mean, can you? Sure, but it's not that effective, and it wouldn't nearly be as enjoyable. Spoons. Very important tool. I'm sure you all have some in your home. And I just hope that you find time to enjoy a spoon this week. Hey, and it also gave us quite a nice position with our loved one, hasn't it? Spooning in bed is always pretty nice. I mean, for a short amount of time. It depends on if you're big spoon or small spoon. And I'm not afraid to admit, as a man who is confident and secure, I'm not afraid to admit I like being small spoon. I like being spooned. I find it very comforting and nice. I also like being big spoon. But, and I believe Kevin Smith brought this up in one of his movies, sometimes that arm that you're laying, you don't quite know what to do with it. It's not, you can't really get, it gets uncomfortable after a little bit. So, anyway, thank you, Spoon, for sponsoring this week's podcast. You know, it's not too bad down here in the basement today. Because I think the weather outside is kind of mild, and so it's fairly mild down here. And, oh my gosh, I've received a couple notes about my shows in Des Moines, people asking how they went, and some people saying they were there and they enjoyed themselves. I'm so glad I had a wonderful time in Des Moines, Iowa, at the Funny Bone there. I always do. Thank you so much to everybody who came out and said hi to me after the show and got some pictures or whatever and bought some koozies or whatnot and met my friend Sean, who opened for me, one of my best friends. Man, just a terrific, terrific time. Thank you. Thank you very much. And if you follow me on Instagram, thank you for putting up with my constant silly little videos about me being there. I've got a lot of shows coming up, so there'll be a lot more videos. So I hope you enjoy them. If not, you know, ignore them or unfollow, whatever you got to do. I love having you on my Instagram, so I'd hate to see you go. But anyway, I try to make them somewhat enjoyable. My schedule is available at thatjosharnold.com. And I'll always post on Instagram about my upcoming gigs. I think next is Louisville and then Cincinnati and Toledo, and just added some Peoria shows and Cedar Rapids shows and Fort Wayne shows. And yeah, so a lot happening. Check out my schedule at thatjosharnold.com. Well, what do you say? Are you guys ready to hop on board the TJA Express? Yes, the old Arn track. The world's only steam-powered monorail. Ah. Boy, oh boy. Wonderful sound there as we cruise along. And my gosh, if we haven't found ourselves in Vocabville. Oh, what a lovely place. We all love Vocabville. Why? Because we learn about a word that maybe we didn't know about. And this one I certainly was not aware of. And you'll soon maybe realize why, because it's completely antiquated. But perhaps you've heard this. I never had, but I certainly think it's a good one. The word this week, Gardiloo. That's right, Gardiloo. Actually, I think the emphasis is supposed to be on the end, the last syllable there. So Gardiloo, G-A-R-D-Y-L-O-O. A Gardiloo is a warning cry that slop or waste was about to be thrown from an upstairs window to the street below. So we've all read old books or seen old movies where that's what you would do. You would have your slop or your maybe from the kitchen or a bedpan, which is awful, but it's something that happened. And or even your bath water, you know, don't throw the baby out with the bath water, that kind of thing. So if you lived in some sort of tenement and you were on the upper floors, you would, before throwing out this gross stuff, you would yell, Gardiloo! And the people below walking on the streets and the sidewalk would know, look out, some stuff's coming down, and you don't want to be under it. So, Gardiloo! Boy, I bet when you heard Gardiloo, you moved. Especially if you'd been hit by something before. I'm sure you went right to the middle of the street and stayed out of the gutter area there. Gardiloo. Obviously, I doubt that this is said anywhere anymore times have changed. Indoor plumbing and garbage disposals and baths that drain, that sort of thing, have made this obsolete. But what a fun word. Gardy Lou. So maybe the next time you're, I don't know, occasionally you have, there's reason to toss something out a window. You know what I do? I do, maybe this is weird, but if I have like, if I cut up vegetables or whatever, or if I eat some vegetables and then I don't eat the leftovers and they kind of go bad, a lot of times I just walk out on my deck and I have a semi-wooded backyard. I just chuck that stuff out of my backyard. Anything that's sort of bio or like compostable. I don't have a compost box or heap. I'd like to. I should have. You know what? I will eventually make one or get one. But for now, I just throw any leftover like produce. Not everything. I wouldn't, like, if I had a like a pineapple that I just let kind of go like spoil on my couch, I wouldn't just chuck that whole pineapple out there. But just a few things, I'll just toss them out into the backyard. Nobody cares. It's my backyard. I mean, maybe occasionally a kid running through will go, "Hey, what the hell are these green beans doing?" But other than that, I like to think that maybe some critter will get it. So, maybe from now on I will yell Gardy Lou. That's what I'm going to do. I'm yelling Gardy Lou every time I do that now. My neighbors sometimes have to be baffled by me. That's going to baffle them. I mean, I know they're baffled when, if I'm grilling outside. Chick McGee, I once said that I always wanted a triangle, like a dinner bell, so I could clang it and yell, "Come and get it." And Chick actually got me one. And so it hangs on my deck. And I will, after I've grilled, clang it and yell, "Come and get it." And it's just me. It's just me who's going to be eating it. So they must, but I abuse myself. And now I will do that with Gardy Lou as well. And I hope you do too. All right. Let's get this train chugging along again, because we have one more stop to make. Boy, oh boy. Ah, feels good. And that really does make me wistful for a train ride. I need to get on a train soon, whether it be at a theme park or something. But I would love where I can actually feel the air. So I'll probably have to go to like a zoo or a theme park. Sort of feel the breeze as you ride along in the train. I don't want to be stuck in some car, like the closed train cars. All right, so here we are at Movie Mountain. That's right, Movie Mountain, the highest mountain in this area. And by that I mean it's like 100 feet. It's not very high, but it is the highest peak around. And you might notice that we're kind of in between Movie Mountain. We're closer to Movie Mountain than Bookburg, but Bookburg's close. And I'll tell you why we sort of stopped the train here. Boy, this movie, I watch this movie a few times a year. And if you've seen it, you might go, "Geez, that's some heavy stuff to watch a few times a year." But the reason I do is because the script is so smart and so sharp and efficient and economical that I watch this thing to remind me to write better, essentially, to work harder on dialogue and things like that. And because, as you guys know, I write, I'll write short stories or I'll write screenplays. I'm always kind of working on something. And so this really, every now and again, I look at this and go, okay, yeah, this is, I got to step it up. The movie came out in 2004 and it's called Closer. And it's, I've talked to some people who just hated it. They hated it. And I've talked to many who thought it was a masterpiece. I fall into the category of I think it is. The script itself is a masterpiece, and the movie sure is. If it's not, it's darn close. It stars Julia Roberts and Natalie Portman and Jude Law and Clive Owen, and that's about it. It's based on a play, which was a quartet, of course, a four-person play. So the movie does have other people in it, but, I mean, the main focus is these four. And it was directed by the great Mike Nichols and written by Patrick Marber, who wrote the play. And this thing is ferocious. It's about two men and two women and how they all their love lives sort of intertwine with each other. And it's about. I mean, it's essentially about love and relationships, but it is harsh. And the honesty and the honest communication in this movie can be just brutal. And it's amazing. It's a marvel of dialogue. I mean, some of the lines are, they're just killers. They hit you, they punch you right in the gut. Or they stab you right in the heart. I mean, it's a powerhouse script, and the acting is incredible. I think the only person nominated for this movie, I'd have to look this up. I know Clive Owen was nominated for Best Supporting Actor, and he should have won. I'll have to look to see who else was nominated. But man, I was disappointed that he didn't win. He nails this thing. It's a heavy movie. It's funny, but it's like wickedly funny. I mean, the laughs are, they're laced with a little bit of poison, and, the drama is high, and, the emotions are real, and they're right, you know, right on everybody's sleeve. And, it's terrific stuff. And if you also want to treat yourself, read the play. And that's why The Train right now is a little close to Bookburg, too. Read Patrick Marber's Closer. It crackles. I mean, it's just dynamite. So, Closer. Check it out. If you have and you didn't like it, that's quite all right. This one's not going to be for everybody because it is it's tough. It's also got a killer song that bookends the movie. It's all right. Yeah, I really, really recommend it. And if you have seen it, maybe give it another visit. Especially if you liked it. Okay. Well, I see the monorail is. We've essentially made our way back here to the basement. And you know, I mentioned long ago on a podcast about. Things kind of occurring in one's life, and sometimes things have happened. Your parents made decisions, or somebody in your life used to do something, or a tradition has come around, and you kind of don't know the backstory or the history or too much about it. And I said, you know, I posited maybe we don't need to know the backstory. Maybe it's better if we create our own. Sometimes it's wonderful knowing how tradition started, and sometimes it's fun to go, oh, man, I don't know how this started, but I sure am grateful for it. Well, I received a story from a listener a while back, and I revisited it, and I really want to share it with you. It comes from Edward, and I just found this to be so lovely. He was talking, he talks about how one day, his parents, they were putting up drywall, and they were replacing the old walls, and they were in a discussion. And he says, my mom had something she didn't want to fess up to. And it was like real. It was like a real, like this was sort of a confession that was maybe a little heavy. And so her husband, his dad, Edward's dad, handed her a pen and said, don't tell me what it is, just write it. And she did. She wrote the confession down on the sheet of drywall that they were putting up. And to make her feel better, he wrote something he was ashamed to admit. And they did this over and over. They wrote secrets and things they felt guilty for and embarrassing moments from the past. And they filled an entire sheet of drywall and they read each other's confessions. They sat there and they looked everything over and they read one another's confessions. And they didn't say anything. There must have been lingering questions. But they didn't talk about any of it. They just had it there on the drywall. And Edward says his dad said, well, if that's everything, I can live with it. And his mother agreed, said, yes, if that's everything, I can live with it too. And they knew right then that they were destined to be with each other, that they were in love, and that nothing was going to get in the way of that love. They had just shared their most intimate secrets and shames and embarrassments, and they were fine with it. In fact, it probably made them love each other a little more. So what did they do? They mounted that panel of drywall. They painted it, and they never talked about any of that stuff again. Isn't that something? Man, oh man. That is just such a lovely story. So wonderful. Thank you very, very much, Edward, for sharing that. And I hope you're enjoying life on Big Island, Hawaii. Boy, oh boy. I'm sure, you know, I bet you've got some wonderful stories from there and some wonderful scenery you see every day. You may pay $12 for a gallon of milk, but I don't know. But boy, good on you and your folks. Thank you for sharing that. This week, August 1st, marked my fifth anniversary with the Bob and Tom Show. It was 5 years ago, a couple days ago, that I officially joined the Bob and Tom cast. And I tell you what, the 5 years have flown by. I'm as close to never working a day in my life as I've ever been. Because they say if you love what you do, you never truly work a day. And I got to tell you, I'm pretty much there. The only thing that makes it feel like work sometimes is when my alarm goes off and I have to get up so early in the morning. But actually sitting in the studio rarely ever feels like work. And how blessed, boy, I never take it for granted. And I never take you for granted listening to the big show. And, oh, man, just thrilled to be a part of it. I should tell you, this should be good news for most of you. I've recently signed an extension, so the nonsense will continue. And, I'm just loving it. And thank you guys all so much for being here. I've got some questions about the big show that people have sent in that I'd like to answer here. Let's see here. Oh, this is a good one. Josh, this comes from what a coincidence this is. This was not done on purpose. I read things and I print them out and this question comes from Edward of Big Island, Hawaii. I save all the questions I get in a folder, and then I look through them, and I sometimes randomly print them out. That's what I did today, and it happens so happens that I printed out. Edward, okay, we're still with you, pal. I hear you saying certain things, he says, in the show, jokingly, I suppose. However, the knowledge you sometimes present makes me think you may be a fellow truther. I don't think I know exactly what a truther is. I've heard it used in a few ways. I think one way I've heard it is, were people who doubted President Obama's, birth certificate called truthers? I think they were. I think they were known as truthers. If I ever joke about that, I'm not honest. If in that case, I am not honestly a truther. If you are, look, what do I know? But I don't consider myself a truther in doubting where he was born or whatever. Quite honestly, part of me doesn't even care. So if you mean that, no. But if you mean, because here you say, obviously not all conspiracies are real, nor are all, quote, official narratives. I totally agree with that. I'm definitely if you want to use the term truther in that respect. Of course, not all conspiracies are real. But I'm going to say, of course, not all official narratives are real. You go on to cite cryptids, aliens, JFK, 9/11, COVID. One or more are bound to vary from the cover story. You're right. They are bound to vary. Some aren't. I look, a couple of these I can eliminate for me personally right away. I don't think 9/11 was a big conspiracy at all. I think it was a heinous act of terrorism. And that's it. That one I can cross off. I would not be a truther in that regard. JFK, man, I mean, there's evidence on all sides of this one for me. And I think I am somewhat of a conspiracy theorist when it comes to that. In what regard, like, say, do I believe there was only one shooter? I just don't know. I don't know. There are a lot of questions with that one for me. And by the way, feel free to call me a crackpot if you disagree with me. It doesn't really matter to me. But I can tell you this. I love the movie, the Oliver Stone flick. Whether a lot of that is horse crap or not, just what a cinematic feat that old movie is. It certainly is, and it's certainly compelling. Conspiracies oftentimes conspiracies are just ways for people to deal with upsetting situations. For instance, you could argue, 9/11, JFK, all these those types of things. Edward also said COVID. There are conspiracies regarding that. And it's because, man, sometimes the truth is just really hard to swallow. Did somebody really kill the president? And it's so tragic and so devastating that our minds look for answers anywhere they can get them. They look for some sort of way to reason, make unreasonable things reasonable, or make unfathomable things more understandable. So, in that regard, conspiracies will pop up that way. Now, when it comes to COVID, I know there are a ton of views out there and a ton of differing opinions. The most I can say about the whole thing is I look forward to reading the book in 10 years when we have all the answers. And I'm being presumptuous that we'll have all the answers in 10 years or whatever. But I think this thing is still, relatively speaking, in its infancy. We have I think we have some knowledge, but a lot of it's speculation in regards to the virus itself, in regards to vaccines, in regards to anything. All I know is I've got my beliefs, do any of us really know? I think we're just doing our best to listen to the smartest people in the room and make our decisions as best we can. So conspiracies, look, I should also say this, because Edward, you bring up a good point. I say certain things on the show and you say jokingly, I suppose, that's the key. All right. The Bob and Tom Show is not a news show. Okay, we are entertainment, and that's all we set out to be. And oftentimes I will say contradictory things or even controversial things to piss off Tom or Chick or Christy or Willie or whoever. I'll just be argumentative. So and silly. So yeah, I mean, obviously, anything I say on the show, take with a grain of salt. I could just be trying to stir the pot. So now, when it comes to things like cryptids, you know, your Bigfoots, your chupacabras, your Loch Ness monsters, things like that, and aliens and ghosts and all that stuff. Yeah, I'm a believer in a lot of that stuff. And is there evidence to show that all those things truly exist? No. but I'm still a believer, and I there's not enough evidence to suggest that they don't. And this is where people would definitely argue with me, and you have every right to disagree with me on this. But I like believing in that stuff. I choose to believe in it, and I think it's fascinating and fun and a little scary, and yeah, it's cool. So, yeah, do I look at science? I love when things are debunked scientifically. I love it. Because, quite honestly, I mean, the world is fascinating without conspiracy theories. I mean, oh boy. When things are debunked scientifically, it's like, oh, this is still amazing that the world and nature and things work this way. I love it. So I'm by no means a denier of science, but I do. I'm also not a denier of many sort of conspiracy theories or beliefs in the supernatural and that sort of thing. So, yeah. So when I make jokes about, you know, some controversial topics like vaccines or climate change or whatever, one of the things that I always joke about is that Michelle Obama hates fat people. And that's one of my favorite things to joke about. And here's... If you've ever wondered, if you've ever heard me say, well, you know, Michelle Obama hates fat people. here's where that comes from. All right. And I'm going to be totally honest with you. And some of you are going to go, are you? You're an idiot. And that's totally fine. I'm not saying I'm not an idiot. I think we all know that the first lady, the former first ladies, I don't know how that works. If you say former or you still say first lady, but what, so no disrespect meant in any way, but Michelle Obama's big push when she was acting first lady was to fight childhood obesity. That was one of her big things. And so some rules came out during the Obama administration. Such as restaurant menus have to show caloric counts, and menus that they need to be on menus and stuff like that. They have to show how many calories are in a dish, and also some things like, hey, instead of cookies and cupcakes at kids' birthday parties in school, you need to serve veggie dishes and rice cakes or whatever. So. When I say Michelle Obama hates fat people, I'm making jokes about that push, that fight against childhood obesity. And so do I believe that she actually hates fat people? No, that's the joke. But it is based on a kernel of truth, which is that she did a lot of work to battle what I think is considered an epidemic of obesity and childhood obesity particularly. So, and as somebody who is considered obese, by the way, medically, I'm medically obese. That term is, and by the way, if a doctor ever goes, well, you are obese, don't take it too personally. The overweight to obese is like, man, it's something, because we consider, like, whenever you hear the word obese, you think of the fattest person you've ever seen. But obesity, like, I think you're considered obese if you're like 15 pounds overweight. It's something really low. So, and then the phrase morbidly obese has always made me laugh. Like, oh, geez, that is, you're so obese, it's morbid. I mean, that's crazy. By the way, I've never achieved morbid obesity. And I asked my doctor one time, I said, because she goes, you're obese. You're not morbidly obese. And I said, what is morbidly obese? What? So how much more would I have to gain to be morbidly obese? And she goes, I'm not going to tell you. And I laughed so hard. I go, I know what you're doing, because you know that I would, you want me to lose weight, of course, doc. But you know that if I knew where morbidly obese was, I would go right up to it. And so long as I never crossed into morbidity, I would feel okay. She knew me too well. So anyway, that's where that stems from. But I'm also trying to get these guys to call me a dummy or whatever. Call me. I'm trying to I'm trying to annoy them or create some sort of comedic dialogue or whatever by saying many of the things I do. Quite honestly, do you guys care? I mean, do you really care how I feel about where I stand politically or sociopolitically or any? I mean, I'm pretty, you guys, I'm pretty open. And I should also tell, I guess I could just tell, I'm all over the place. And my opinions vary. And quite honestly, they grow and change. So I'm very opinionated, but they're not etched in stone. You know, I'm willing to grow and change and adjust. Now, there are some things where I'll never grow and change or adjust, but that's okay. And you know what? And some of you are probably yelling at your speakers right now. Yeah, I do kind of want to know where you stand on certain things. Well, I like that you don't. And I like not knowing, you know what I mean? Because to me, those kind of beliefs and philosophies, it doesn't define you as a person. It really doesn't. Who you voted for or how you feel about a certain issue is just one, in my opinion, tiny aspect of your life. It does not define. We all know people on all sides who are great people, and we've all met people who were a-holes on all sides, you know? So it does not, that stuff does not define you. Your experiences are your own, and your life is your own, and you know, I'm just not willing to judge somebody solely on how they vote or how they feel about certain issues. So I don't know. I don't think I'm wrong in that, in living that way. But, you know, somebody does think that I'm wrong in living that way, and that's okay. Again, I'm not willing to judge you for feeling that way. There are many, many more important things I feel in life than that stuff. So what else? A great question, Edward. Yeah, I hope I answered it. I know I rambled, but I hope I, in that rambling, I answered the question. Dustin. Oh, good man, Dustin. Can't wait to see you in Peoria once tickets go on sale. Oh, yeah, man. Please say hi when you're after a show. You say, since being in a role where you are more in the public eye, have you formed a legitimate close friendship with a Bob and Tom fan, meaning going out with them, visiting their house, vice versa, spending holidays together? Why or why not? But yeah, that's a good question. And the truth is, you know, I guess I'm going to say yes. Because my ex-girlfriend, my last girlfriend, I met via a message she sent me because she listened to the show. So she was and is a Bob and Tom fan and reached out to me. And, if I remember correctly, she reached out to me and I either didn't see her first message, but I did, or I just didn't respond to it. I oftentimes, unfortunately, miss a lot of messages I get. She sent, and then she sent something again and it caught my eye. I remember because it was funny. She had a comment about something happening on the show, and then I responded and we started talking, and eventually met up for lunch. And then things got very serious very quickly. And, oh my gosh, she's one of my absolute favorite people on the planet. We're not together anymore. But, I'd be lying if I said I didn't still love her in many ways, and I miss her. We don't talk as much as we used to. That's just sort of the nature of things. A huge part of my life there. She moved in with, we lived together, we had wonderful times. I mean, just great, great times, and also some pretty rough times. I mean, I don't remember too many times where we really got angry at each other, but there was, we broke up, and so there was a lot of sadness at times too. And but you know what? We were sad together. We'd never really, I think she would agree with me. We never, would abandon each other in those moments. We were sad together, and but we were also really, really happy together too. And so in that case, one of my closest relationships ever was formed because of the Bob and Tom Show, or me being in the public eye. And other than that, not really. I mean, there have been a couple other people that I've met through social media because of the show. And then it was like, hey, here's my phone number. We can talk that way, that kind of thing. Or email me or whatever. Or, we just stay casual. We'll chat every now and again. On Instagram or whatever. So yes, I have made friends. Now, unfortunately, I can't form friendships with everybody who has reached out or invited me to things or stuff like that. I just can't. My schedule doesn't require it. And believe it or not, you might be surprised to know that I'm actually more shy and reserved than I guarantee I'm more shy and reserved than you think. And there are a few different reasons for that. One is that I'm outgoing for a living. and that means, I need the other side of that. So in my private life, I can be very private and I can be very quiet and, spend a lot of time alone. I don't spend a lot of time lonely. That does happen, but I spend a lot of time alone, and I need it because I couldn't be that outgoing all the time. There are people who can, but I can't. I need the flip side to it. So, but if you see me out, my gosh, say hi. I love meeting people, and I love saying hi and learning about what you do for a living and stuff like that. So I'm always interested in people. So please don't think that I'm unapproachable. I'm absolutely not unapproachable. But in terms of making a ton of friends and going out a lot with people who listen to the show, it doesn't happen that much. And it doesn't mean that it won't, but yeah. So, all right. What else? Who's this now? Chris. Chris says, if you didn't get the gig on the Bob and Tom Show, where do you think you'd be career-wise, geographically, where you live, etc.? Oh, man. It's interesting. I think I may have mentioned this before, but for those of you who may not remember or hadn't heard, when I first was hired back in the summer of 2016, officially hired without being officially hired. And by that, what I mean is we've all joked, everybody that's sort of part of the show has joked that Tom never said, hey, you're hired. It was always more of a vague sort of, all right, well, come on in and yeah, we'll see how it goes, that kind of thing. But then the next thing you know, you're signing a contract order. So you know that you are, but you never officially heard, you know, from him, which is totally fine. He's in some ways, he's also shy and reserved and close to the vest with things. And that happens to be one of those. So before I was officially hired, I was making early plans to move to the West Coast. I was going to I was doing stand up for a living as a feature. And the money wasn't great. It was I could live, but I was sharing an apartment with one of my best friends, Sean O'Brien, and we a rent, like I think we each had to pay like $400 a month or whatever. So we could easily pay our bills and rent. I could do it while working as a feature comedian on the road. But I was like, okay, I'm 30, whatever. Boy, what was I, 38 or 37? You know, I guess I should move out to LA and see if I could act. I love acting, and I've always wanted to act, and I always will want to act. I thought, man, yeah, if I can get out there and maybe do stand up and get a little bit of get noticed enough to where I'd be invited to auditions. And in the meantime, I would have to have a different job. So I was I was actually talking to a buddy of mine who is in the adult film industry. Now, before you, I could hear you all laughing, but what he did was he was a distributor. So he worked, he owns a distribution company, meaning he doesn't necessarily produce movies, adult films himself. He runs a warehouse where they store. This was, by the way, I've talked to him recently, but we haven't talked work. We don't really talk shop that much. I don't know. What was he? Yes. Back then, and I had visited his warehouse, and it was this giant warehouse filled with DVDs and Blu-rays of adult films. And it's like, holy cow. And I remember him going, hey, take whatever you want. And he was like, grab one of those shopping carts. And just go around and take whatever you want. And I didn't really, because DVD and Blu-ray were like, that's not how I was consuming my porn anymore. Dude, if I had known him, like if it had been like 2001 and I had gone into that, I mean, I would still be there filling shopping carts. But it was kind of one of those things where I grabbed a few as jokes. Some really what I look, and I'm not out to judge anybody, but what I considered the grosser porn, and it was there. I grabbed a few of those, and what I would do is secretly leave them at friends' houses in places where they, so that somebody might go, dude, why do you have this? And they go, what? That's not mine. So I did that to a couple friends. And in fact, Sean O'Brien, my roommate, there were like two or three that were just really, really, gross. They were gross porn. I mean, I don't know how, any other way to put it. And what we would do is he would also do comedy on the road, or he would travel for other reasons, and so was I. And so what we would do is if we knew somebody was hitting the road for a little bit, we would sneak a copy, like one of the DVDs, into their suitcase. And so they wouldn't discover it until they were either being searched at the airport or they would arrive wherever they were and open up their bag and go, oh, damn it. We did that so many times. And it never occurred to us to check our bag before we left the apartment, because I don't know why. I guess it was because he and I both were similar. Like, we're both sort of, we would procrastinate. So we would pack in a hurry and get out of there. So we always knew that the other person was sort of frenzied when they were doing, and so we could easily slip the DVD in. And man, hilarious. And that's that son of a bitch. He won. He won the whole thing, and here's why. I moved out, and I moved to Indianapolis to be on the Bob and Tom show. So I got I packed everything up. I packed everything up, and it was there. And I said, "Hey, I have to go. The movers are coming here to get my stuff and drive it to Indianapolis, but I have to leave today because I'm working tomorrow or whatever." So, so what he did was he opened this box that I had, and he put those DVDs in the box unbeknownst to me. And so when I was unpacking things here in Indianapolis, there they were, those damn gross porn DVDs. So he won. He got rid of them, and I was stuck with them. And I eventually pranked Chris Spangle on of the Bob and Tom staff and his own podcasts and stuff. I left them like in his desk one day or whatever. And then I remember we got kind of in trouble for having that kind of stuff on in the workplace. But I don't know what eventually happened to it. If you want to know what happened to the gross porn, ask Chris Spangle. I think he was the last person to have it. So, how did I get to that? Who knows? But I can tell you, I can go back to the heart of the question, which was I was going to move. Oh, that's what it was. My buddy, I said, "Hey, I think I'm going to move out there. Can I have a job? Like, do you have any openings for somebody to sweep the warehouse or stock it or whatever?" And he had gone primarily from DVDs and Blu-ray to sex toys. He said, "Man, the money is no longer in the movies for obvious reasons, internet and stuff like that. It's in the toys themselves." And I was like, "I don't care. I wouldn't tell my, you know, nieces what I was doing for a living, but it doesn't bother me that I would be stocking shelves with adult toys. You know, if anything, I'd get some material out of it and some laughs every day or whatever. And, maybe even my female friends, I'd have some gifts for them." So, I was like, you know, anything you've got, or I'd done years of copywriting. I said, if you need somebody to write, copy for whatever the packages or I could do that. And he was like, "All right, well, yeah, I think I could probably have something. It wouldn't pay much," but I go, "All I would need is for my rent to be paid and my bills. And then, you know, I just want to give this thing a shot." So, to make a long story short, too late. I would have gone out to LA and seen how things were there. Do I have any? You're not asking this, but I'm asking it and going to answer it. Do I have any regrets that things worked out the way they did? That instead I took the radio gig and didn't move out to LA to see if I could make it as an actor? None at all. So, let's say LA didn't work out and I didn't get on the Bob and Tom show. What would I be doing? I think I'd still be doing stand up. And, that is what I'd be doing. So, and if that wasn't working out, I've always had in the back of my head that I could go back to Korea and teach, do that until the next thing I decided I wanted to do came to me. So that was always an option for me. Boy, the thing about it is, would I like to be in movies and stuff? Because I love them, and I think acting is so much fun and challenging and stuff like that. But I can do it. Like I can do it wherever I am. The way things are now, you can make a movie, and I've done it. I helped write one, and I starred in it. I've done other. I've done a few movies. I've never directed or anything like that. But you can. I mean, you can just do it with the way things are. Will it be seen in a theater by millions of people? Not necessarily. But hell, you throw it up on wherever you like. You get some streams. And if you like it and you're proud of it, you get it out there. Hey, you did it. So I can always do that kind of stuff. And I'll tell you what, I will. And things are in the works. It's pretty cool. You can go out there and just make a movie if you wanted, or a web series or whatever, and get whoever you can to watch it, and you don't know what'll happen. So what I would love is, and this is something I'm working toward, is to be on the Bob and Tom Show and like once a year do some cool film project or some sort of acting project where like on our weeks off, we get a week off in the summer where that would be like my main thing or something during that week. Or I mean, let's be honest, my hours are such that I can do something like that. I could do a low budget shoot for half every day after the show. And on our weekends. So that's kind of my goal. And I think, boy, I think that would be a lot of fun. And maybe it would be under some, I could always talk to Tom and go, hey, should we have like a Bob and Tom production banner where we can essentially make our own shows or movies and then just distribute them ourselves? And it would be, Frigamall Productions or something like that. So. I'm blessed. I've got some opportunities here. And I also know really good people in the ultra low budget indie film industry. Great people who are a lot of fun. And I also just want to be able to work with them more. It's just fun stuff. Okay, great. Chris, I know you've got another question here, but we'll talk about that another time. All right. I guess, should we call it a day? Sounds good to me. Just looking through things here. Boy, what a professional podcast I run here, huh? Isn't it, don't you, every time you listen, aren't you like, you know what? We're in good hands. yes. Anyway, to recap a few things, thatjosharnold.com for my comedy schedule. I'm having a lot of fun so far and working out some new bits and reworking some older bits and quite frankly, some of them just doing them as they've been done for the last 6 years so or whatever. But man, it's been so great meeting you folks out on the road, and I can't wait to keep doing it. Oh, here's something we should work on. The first would be tightening up that cue. The second, but that was totally my fault. Jason is not at fault there. I surprised him. I sprung it on him. All right. Things to work on this week. Well, a thing to work on this week would be, you're going to be, I don't know if you're going to like this or not, but I thought of it earlier today, and I like it, we're doing it. What I want you to work on this week? Nothing. Give yourself a break. Enjoy yourself. Do what you've been doing. Keep doing good work. And, You know why? You know what got me thinking about this? The whole Simone Biles thing. And by the way, I think you guys know, I haven't been following the news at all. So I get my news from my coworkers pretty much. And from what I've gathered, Simone Biles having some legitimate, like mental and physical things, at the Olympics this year. And some people are saying, hey, you need to fight through it and perform. And others are saying, my gosh, take a break. If you're not feeling it, don't do it. You're just going to hurt yourself. But what it got me thinking about was, so to me, that seems to be the crux of the issue. To me, it's, how do I feel about it? I'll give you my opinion. I think she's a wonderful ambassador for the country, and whatever she's doing over there is great. Whether she's able to, I guarantee she wants to perform, right? She wants to do what she can. But if she can't, she can't. And, you know, I think there are lessons to be learned about, you know, you always do your best and you always try your hardest. But sometimes you got to put your safety first and your mental health first or whatever it is. But anyway, it got me thinking about pressure and how much pressure the Olympians are put under and how much pressure we're put under. And a lot of it is outside pressure, but a lot of it is also, and I'm real guilty of this, very guilty of it. It's one of the main reasons I'm in therapy is to sort of address this and putting pressure on ourselves, undue pressure on ourselves. And I thought, you know what? This week, what we should work on is don't put any undue pressure on yourself. So essentially, don't work on anything. Just do what you're doing, all right? And we can worry about making ourselves better another time. I'm very proud of you all, and I'm very thankful for all of you. Oh, and I wanted to ask you guys, did you happen to notice that bye?
The United States Soccer Federation presents the U.S. Soccer Podcast.
This is the show where we bring you in-depth interviews with U.S. soccer stars.
This time,
Sam Coffey.
The World Cup is in 2 years.
Is it time yet? Like, can we get back into camp?
Tim Ream.
We're going to continue to show other countries we're not going to be pushed around.
And Jedi Robinson.
Every time you come back and you put the jersey on, it means more and more each time.
So we'll be back here with all the best stories.
The U.S. Soccer Podcast.
We've got a lot to talk about.
Follow and listen on your favorite platform.